for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Christy Walters for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. This edition's headline, I Need for You to Have Courage. Female executives and C-suite leaders share strategies for breaking down barriers and strengthening the roles of women in business. Our first article, Doretta Rhodes, Atlanta Braves Chief Culture Officer, We're the Ones That Provide Voice, by Kate Tracy. Doretta Rhodes is used to being the only woman in the room, but she recently experienced quite the opposite here in the Triangle. On May 15th at the Umstead Hotel and Spa in Cary, Rhodes spoke in front of a packed ballroom of 250-plus women as the keynote speaker for Triangle Business Journal's first-ever Empowered Women's Forum. The Executive Vice President and Chief Culture Officer for the Atlanta Braves is one of two women in key leadership positions at the professional baseball team. We are the ones that provide strength. We are the ones that provide voice. And we are the ones that provide confidence, not just to women, but to men too. And that is what is so important when we think about women empowerment, she said. Rhodes spoke of times in her career where she experienced imposter syndrome. She's had leaders tell her that she's not capable of taking on a leadership role. She's had professors tell her she wouldn't be able to graduate from her doctoral program. All they did was then piss me off, and I was like, I'm going to do it anyway because you said I couldn't, Rhodes said. Earlier in her career, Rhodes recalled the time when she was the only woman in the room as her team discussed a merger that was about to happen. The discussion turned toward asking who would take the lead on the project. One person turned to Rhodes and said, you can do this because you don't have children. At the time, Rhodes had a newborn and a two-year-old, but she didn't mention them. All she said was, I can do the project. I was afraid that if I said I had children, that I wouldn't get the assignment, and I felt like if I didn't get the assignment, I wouldn't get advancement, she said. I had no one else in that room that could have given me the power of my own voice. That moment stuck with Rhodes. Now, she wants to be the person to advocate for others in their workplaces. Perhaps what stuck with her the most throughout her life is the words of her grandmother, whom Rhodes spent every summer with on her farm in Arkansas. Her grandmother would tell her, I need for you to have courage. I need for you to not worry about what somebody says about you, because guess what? What they're saying about you is none of your business. There are two related articles to our cover page. The first one, In Turbulent Times, Have a Plan B, by Lauren Ornesorg. Don't be afraid to pivot. It can take you places you don't expect. That's a takeaway from Sangeeta Morjani, Boston-based EVP and head of tax-exempt market at Fidelity Investments, during a fireside chat at Triangle Business Journal's first-ever Empowered Women's Forum at the Umstead Hotel and Spa. Morjani didn't set out to be a finance leader, admitting her career was really clinched as a new college graduate when she saw a really cool Citibank building in her parents' then city of Dubai and thought it would be a fun place to work. She applied and took on an internship in that very building, kickstarting decades in finance and financial services. She also recalls being 7 years old and watching her parents track their own finances, popping out a diary every weekend where they would record their expenses. The concept of budgeting, the concept of living within your means, I'm so grateful, she said. Morjani paid attention and built the foundation within herself that she would lean on throughout her career. Finance is now a passion, but not everyone's passion, she said. And it's okay if the women in the crowd don't yet know how to harness their own passions into a career. It's never too late, she said. You can start now, this moment. Our second related article, Just Running the Business Isn't Good Enough, also by Lauren Ornesorg. Speak up when no one else does, and keep speaking up, especially now. That's the message of Kathy Waller, former chief financial officer of Coca-Cola and fireside chat speaker at TBJ's Empowered Women's Forum. She shared how she spoke up years ago as a new hire at the beverage giant, a pivotal move that ended up launching her entire career. Waller was working in accounting research for Coca-Cola. The then new CFO was rehearsing remarks and asked for advice from a group gathered to observe. Crickets from her colleagues who weren't about to touch that, she recalls. I can't help myself, she said. I feel myself raising my hand, and he calls on me, so I gave him my perspective. Waller's phone was ringing when she returned to her cubicle, and it was the CFO's secretary. I was like, okay, I'm going to get fired, she said. But instead of getting fired, he asked Waller to work with him every quarter on his board presentations. It was a relationship that became critical as it helped facilitate her rise to the eventual CFO spot. However, she's had several incidents where it was clear that people were uncomfortable answering to a woman, and in particular, a black woman. There were a lot of people who thought if I got this job, they could certainly get that job, Waller said. I always said to them, perhaps you could, but I have the job right now. The chat was moderated by Helen Lolis, president and CEO of Pathbuilders. I never thought we'd be here, and what a shame it is, Waller said, of the current pushback against diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. I feel like so much is going to potentially be lost, and it's happening on my watch. I've been working to help women develop. Waller started a group at Coca-Cola to increase the number of women in leadership roles, and it's been working, she said. And now, to put all that in question really is troubling. Now reading from the Triangle Business Journal's bids page. Belichick boosts UNC football ticks. The buzz around Bill Belichick often seems focused on his relationship with Jordan Hudson, but Belichick's hiring is having the impact UNC Chapel Hill wanted when it hired the famous coach. Athletic director Bubba Cunningham, at a recent stop in Raleigh, noted that Carolina has sold out of its 20,000 season tickets. UNC didn't do that last year. It's been the most significant uptick we've ever seen, Cunningham said. Empty seats impact food and beverage sales and diminish the value of sponsorships, Cunningham noted. And all that's significant because no college sports beyond football and men's basketball make a profit. Triangle towns shine on best places to live list. In an expanded ranking dominated by smaller communities across the country, two booming towns in Wake County are named among the top 10 best places to live. Cary and Apex are among the top municipalities in U.S. News and World Report's 2025 to 2026 best places to live in the U.S. Cary is number 5 on the list, while fast-growing Apex is number 7. Raleigh falls to 155th on this year's ranking, and Charlotte did not make the top 250. A lively exhibit is coming to the Museum of Art. The North Carolina Museum of Art is going to have a different summer as its popular theater is being renovated and not holding concerts, but the museum is holding an exhibit of a painter who thrived in the post-World War II era. Grace Hartigan grew up poor in New Jersey, but was mesmerized after seeing an Henri Matisse painting. She eventually became a celebrated member of the abstract expressionist movement that included Jackson Pollock. The museum is showcasing more than 40 of her works, mostly from the 1950s and 60s. The exhibit, called Grace Hartigan, The Gift of Attention, runs through August 10th. North Carolina adds connection to the Middle East. Airports across North Carolina are adding flights and international connections, but a new flight coming from Charlotte next year is still grabbing attention. Charlotte Douglas International Airport will add a nonstop route to Abu Dhabi, its first connection to the Middle East, the Charlotte Business Journal reported. Etihad Airways will launch service May 4th, with 4 weekly flights to Zayed International Airport in Abu Dhabi. That route will fly on Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays on a Boeing 787-9 Dreamliner that can seat 303 passengers. It will mark that plane's first scheduled service at CLT. Legacy Raleigh bars live on in style. Some legendary Raleigh restaurants and bars are living on, at least on T-shirts. Raleigh's 42nd Street Oyster Bar had its apparel produced by Logan King's Cardinal Apparel. King had started the business when he lived in Raleigh and now runs it out of a 9,000-square-foot shop in Aberdeen. When the Oyster Bar was going out of business, sales surged, so much so that co-owner Brad Hurley reached out to King about keeping sales going. That sparked an idea for King. What about other legendary places? He'd love going to the Jackpot Bar on Hillsborough Street that was torn down more than a decade ago for apartments. When 42nd Street announced they were closing, I knew this was the right opportunity, he said. King teamed with Stephanie Jaskowski, who founded Pine Life and knew the online marketing space, to launch the Raleigh Rewind website. The 42nd Street orders were hot. Right off the bat, they had 1,000 orders with a heavy combination of pint glasses, hoodies, and t-shirts. But he has a collection of other lost favorites, including Crowley's, Sadlak's, East Village Grill, Tiernanog, and even the quirky but fun Burger Hut that lived for years on Morgan Street. And he said there hasn't been an issue using the logos. We knew all of them were open licenses, he said. King's apparel company has done this before, providing t-shirts for the Carolina Hurricanes and even UNC Chapel Hill's national basketball title in 2017. And Cardinal Apparel, with 5 full-time employees, is his major focus, with the Raleigh Rewind a side hustle. But it's one with potential, and King is already reading emails and suggestions about other bars and places that might be next. He even named the Dead Bar Society LLC in case he expands. We feel we are doing a service by keeping these memories around, he said. Now turning to the Triangle Business Journal's top news stories. McConnell Golf sues insurer over $3 million in losses. By Lauren Onishorg. After Hurricane Allen ripped through the 3 of its golf courses, McConnell Golf is suing its insurer over $3 million in unpaid losses. The lawsuit, filed against the Cincinnati Insurance Company in Wake County Superior Court May 15th, claims McConnell Golf paid a substantial premium to CIC for broad insurance coverage to the tune of nearly $888,000. Yet, while CIC hasn't outright denied its claims, it hasn't paid up either, according to the lawsuit. The receipts and invoices have stacked up, said McConnell Golf Chief Operating Officer Christian Anastasiadis, who described the damage as devastating. The storm swept through the courses, destroying bunkers and irrigation systems and forcing a months-long shutdown. This is our livelihood, he said, calling McConnell Golf fortunate in that it had the financial means to front the $3 million that was required to repair and rebuild. And here's the kicker. I had the policy that protects me. They have visited all the sites and given me the runaround. According to the lawsuit filed by attorney Charles George with Wyrick Robbins Yates and Ponton LLP, losses have added up to more than $3.1 million across the 3 courses. The Country Club of Asheville, the Musgrove Mill Golf Club in Clinton, South Carolina, and the Pete Dye River Course of Virginia Tech in Radford, Virginia. CIC, through a spokesperson, declined to comment for this story. CIC has written checks. It paid $250,000 out under an outdoor trees, shrubs, and plants policy, according to the suit. But it's only offered just under $109,000 in other recoveries, an offer McConnell claims it rejected outright, leading to the lawsuit. CIC, according to the lawsuit, claims it does not have sufficient information to make a complete coverage decision and that the full loss amount is not covered. McConnell is asking a court to declare that CIC does have sufficient information and that the damages and losses are covered under the policy. According to McConnell Golf, in addition to sweeping destruction to greens, bunkers, tennis courts, and other assets, the storm forced operational suspensions. Near Clayton, lakeside homes being planned in Johnston County, by Ben Tobin. Million-dollar homes are on the way to one of the hottest counties in North Carolina. Home builders are buying up lots in Cattail, a new community next to Cattail Lake, east of Clayton, in Johnson County. The development is being led by individuals from Raleigh-based New Home, Inc., an LLC that shares an address with the company, Cattail Developers, purchased 5 tracts of land in Johnson County, spanning roughly 95 acres for a little more than $2 million in August 2023, Triangle Business Journal previously reported. According to the community's website, homes will range from the mid-$400,000s to $2 million. Home builders who have bought lots in the development include New Home, Inc., Raleigh-based Homes by Dickerson, Clayton-based Crosswind Custom Homes, and Clayton-based Royalty Homes, Inc. Representatives of New Home, Inc. did not respond to requests seeking comment regarding a construction timeline. The development is described as a breathtaking community centered around an 80-acre lake with 2.5 miles of pristine shoreline, according to the website. Offering private home sites, a resort-style pool, clubhouse, and exclusive private docks, Cattail is designed for those who love the water, the website says. Enjoy direct access to boating and fishing with a private boat launch, all within a peaceful, nature-filled setting. It appears as if Cattail will have at least 4 separate portions per the development's website: the Bluffs, the Overlook, the Peninsula, and the Preserve. For the latter 2, preliminary plats were filed with Johnson County by the developer earlier this year for the first phases, which include 26 and 25 lots, respectively. Johnston County's population has surpassed 250,000, according to U.S. Census Bureau data. Cary site-eyed. Site emerges as potential location for billion-dollar North Carolina Children's Hospital. By Lauren Onishorg. As North Carolina lawmakers debate how much money to allocate toward the state's first freestanding children's hospital, discussions about where to locate the multi-billion-dollar campus have been centered on a booming town in Wake County. Multiple sources have confirmed that the area around the SAS campus in Cary is being eyed as the potential location given its proximity to Interstate 40 and Raleigh-Durham International Airport, both of which are top priorities for the group handling the site selection. UNC Health and Duke Health, which are collaborating on the hospital through a 501c3 called NC Children's, did not comment on whether the Cary location is under consideration. A joint statement from the health systems said they are evaluating several potential locations in the Triangle and that a final decision has not been made. We expect to announce a location for the project by late summer, the statement said. If Cary were to be chosen as the site of the hospital, it would add a jolt of energy to the already booming community, which is frequently named among the best places to live in the country and has a population that's racing towards 200,000. The hospital campus is expected to support thousands of jobs and would no doubt be an attractive selling point for economic development. Officials have previously said the goal is to find a 100-acre site for a campus anchored by a 500-bed hospital. Much of the land around the SAS campus is owned by an investment vehicle tied to SAS CEO and co-founder Jim Goodnight. That entity, Reedy Creek Investments, owns more than 450 acres in the area off North Harrison Avenue. The property is assessed at more than $85 million, according to Wake County land records. Meanwhile, SAS owns more than 400 acres and several office buildings assessed at more than $540 million. In recent months, Reedy Creek has been buying up the few remaining parcels it does not own in the area. Insiders have said no final decision has been made, but that the Cary location makes the most sense. SAS representatives did not return a request for comment. Whether the land would be sold or donated remains unclear, as the 82-year-old Goodnight looks to cement his philanthropic legacy while also positioning his company for a public offering. In the meantime, discussions continue on how much funding for the hospital campus, described as a $2 billion to $3 billion project, will come from North Carolina taxpayers. A draft budget released Monday by lawmakers in the House earmarks just over $216 million for the hospital. The state Senate's proposed budget has $638 million to support the project. The Senate's budget proposed reclaiming $500 million from NC Innovation, a nonprofit focused on advancing research at UNC system schools toward commercialization and shifting it to the hospital. But the House bill calls for that sum to be reallocated toward Hurricane Helene relief. UNC and Duke are eyeing a major fundraising effort to support the project as well. The search for who will lead the hospital's development is also underway. NC Children's is seeking an executive director of construction. According to the job posting, the executive director would be responsible for collaborating with the vice president of real estate, development, and facilities at NC Children's on the development and construction of the campus. And now from reporter pages, starting with Ben Tobin. In Nash County, UNC Health breaks ground in Rocky Mount. A hospital project in Rocky Mount has crossed a huge milestone. UNC Health Nash officially broke ground on its seven-story, 150-bed inpatient tower in Rocky Mount on May 14th. The project is expected to cost around $140 million, with the tower expected to open in late 2027. This new hospital tower is a critical step forward, UNC Nash Board of Commissioners Chairman Bill Lane said during a groundbreaking ceremony. It reflects the shared belief that rural communities deserve the same level of care as any other area. UNC Health Nash has been planning this project for years. Per UNC Health Nash, the tower will connect to the south wing of the existing Nash General Hospital Tower at 2460 Curtis Ellis Drive, with portions of the current facility being repurposed for evolving care delivery and operational needs. The new tower won't increase the total number of licensed hospital beds at UNC's facility in Rocky Mount. Rather, a majority of existing beds will be relocated to the new facility. The new beds will be in private patient rooms with contemporary layouts, enhanced privacy, advanced technology, and upgraded amenities for families and visitors, per a UNC Health Nash press release. Nash General Hospital currently has 282 licensed beds, and the facility opened in 1971. The Waterfront District is going up for sale. Years after unveiling plans for a major mixed-use project, Flowers Plantation is listing the land for sale with the goal of attracting a developer to bring the project to life. Flowers Holding Company, an LLC tied to Flowers Plantation founder Rebecca Flowers, is listing 16 acres at 135 Northeast Flowers Parkway near Clayton for $25 million, or more than $1.56 million per acre. The land is designed to be part of the Waterfront District, which was unveiled in early 2023. Plans call for retail, restaurants, a hotel, and up to 300 residences on the property, which sits next to a retention pond east of the Flowers Crossroads Commercial District. Josh Finch, the listing broker and son of Rebecca Flowers, said they hope to have a developer buy it and build the Waterfront District. "We've been looking at this thing from a standpoint of us building it out versus someone else who does this for a living on this scale, and we put it up for sale, hoping that a commercial developer could come in and jump on it and do it," he said. "Otherwise, we're going to have to do sections at a time. That's the plan right now. However, we put it on a market for sale in case somebody else had the appetite to do it so that our end users and residents could see it happen faster." Finch said they estimate the project will cost $80 million to build out. "It's a big project, and the interest rates ticked up by the time we turned it on," he said. "But to be clear, this is not a project in a municipality where you have to go get it approved and all that stuff. It's already approved. The horizontal work is pretty much done. Most of the infrastructure, roads, and everything are complete." In Pitt County, Greenville plant rolls out first solar panels. A $300 million project in a booming eastern North Carolina city is starting to pay dividends. Vietnam's Boviet Solar said its new Greenville manufacturing facility has produced its first solar panels. The site is the company's first plant in the United States. The solar energy technology company spent just shy of $22 million in April 2024 to buy the existing 500,000-square-foot facility and surrounding 37 acres. Boviet Solar selected Greenville for its first U.S. manufacturing facility and, as part of its $300 million investment, said it would create more than 900 jobs by 2028. The plant is located at 1125 Sugg Parkway. The building was previously occupied by Denso Manufacturing, which announced plans to shut down its Greenville plant in 2022. Scott Chen, Vice President of Global Sales and Marketing for Boviet Solar, said this production marks a proud moment for the company. Producing our first PV modules on U.S. soil reflects our continued dedication to delivering high-quality, reliable solar solutions while contributing to the growth of American clean energy manufacturing, Chen said in a news release. Founded in 2013, Boviet Solar has offices in Germany and China and California, as well as manufacturing facilities in Greenville and Vietnam. Greenville, with a population of roughly 90,000, has landed a string of large investments recently. Turning to real estate and development, pages by Kaylee Thompson. In West Raleigh, developer charts townhome project. The missing middle push continues with a developer targeting a property near the NC State University campus. Forsyth Investments Company filed site plans with the city for a 44-townhome project in West Raleigh. The site proposed for the project is 4.25 acres off Hillsborough Street, east of Interstate 40. Site plans show there will be 8 townhome buildings, one with 8 units, one with 7 units, 5 with 5 units, and one with 4 units. Each unit will be 2,600 square feet. The townhomes will be 3 stories, have 3 bedrooms, and 2 car garages. The project will have 5 outdoor amenity areas totaling 28,923 square feet and 20,180 square feet of tree conservation. A single-story brick ranch that was built in 1962 will be demolished in order to build the townhomes. The home and land have an assessed value of $618,211. The property at 511 Strother Road is zoned Residential 4, one of the zonings that allows for more density per missing middle rules. Forsyth is also taking advantage of the frequent transit development option, which allows for even more density if the site is along a frequent transit route and if 20% of the units meets affordable housing standards. In Northridge, a Florida firm moves ahead with apartments. Florida-based Aventon Companies has started site work on its latest apartment project, Aventon Northridge, near the Northridge Country Club and Northridge Shopping Center. The new community will have 346 units in 5-story buildings. North Raleigh is the Triangle's premier destination for housing, and there are very few remaining sites available to build a community of this scale, said Jeff Furman, Senior Managing Director for Aventon. Situated on 13.62 acres, Aventon North Ridge will be adjacent to Aventon Nora, a 372-unit community that opened in 2023. Vertical construction will start this fall. Aventon Northridge is set to open in early 2027. The company did not disclose development costs or rental rates. Aventon Nora's cost was around $140 million, and its rents run from $1,395 to $2,535. Aventon Nora is 92% leased, according to the property's website. And in new development, logistics company expands space. Guardian Logistics Solutions signed a lease for 103,200 square feet at Welcome Venture Park on Hamlin Road in Durham. The company is moving from its headquarters at Wilden Industrial Center, where it has 80,000 square feet. The 29% increase in space allows for more storage space and more trucking opportunities. Guardian acquired trucking company CargoLink of Raleigh earlier this year. CargoLink is in 30,000 square feet of space on TW Alexander Drive. The combined business will relocate operations to Welcome Venture Park in June, according to Guardian Logistics CEO Brent Smith. The space will house 40 employees, and Guardian employs 115 people across the southeast. Phase 1 of the industrial park is now 84% leased. And nearing downtown, plans are tweaked for a Morgan Street project. A Raleigh property on West Morgan Street near Irregardless has been a pile of rubble and construction materials ever since the former Goodnights Comedy Club was demolished in 2022 to make way for a mixed-use development called 865 Morgan. Vertical construction has yet to happen, even though the project received site plan approval and permits from the city. Goodnights moved to a new home at the Village District. HM Partners and Childress Klein, the developers behind 865 Morgan, have maintained there are no updates to share, but that the project will happen. The city's planning department said it has not received a request to withdraw the plans. City records show a minor revision of the approved site plan was submitted in August 2024. The latest project review was completed by city staff in February. The main difference in the revised site plan is a decrease in square footage for the two buildings due to increasing the number of one-bedroom units while decreasing the amount of two-bedroom units. The development is now proposed to be 433,609 square feet. Previously, it was 438,866 square feet. There will be 311 one-bedroom units and 89 two-bedroom units. The previous plan called for 297 and 104 units, respectively. The commercial space has also been reduced, dropping from 9,000 square feet to 8,864 square feet. Other changes include shrinking the outdoor amenity area, an increase in parking spaces, adding balconies along Tryon Hill and Wakefield Drive, and moving the swimming pool in Building 1 from the courtyard to the rooftop. The project still includes a parking structure attached to Building 1, connecting the commercial space and the residences. The revised site plans show the commercial space is likely to be a restaurant, bar, and shops. Other components remaining the same will be two amenity courtyards, a pedestrian plaza, and buildings 5 to 7 stories high. Heading to Lauren Onosorg's Technology and Innovation page here on the Triangle Business Journal. Open for business. Tar Heel State makes major pitch to manufacturers. Governor Josh Stein and North Carolina Commerce Secretary Lee Lilly trekked to D.C. this month for the Select USA Investment Summit, a conference aimed at attracting businesses to the United States. The trip included a full schedule for Lilly and Stein, from a visit to the Japanese ambassador's residence — Stein plans to visit Japan this fall — to a meeting with Genentech CEO Ashley Magerge. Genentech, based in San Francisco, this month announced plans to build a $700 million, 400-job production facility in Holly Springs. But it was the meetings with projects that have yet to sign that proved the project pipeline is alive and well in North Carolina, despite some federal uncertainty. That included a financial services firm and a medical device company described as close to making decisions about their own pending expansions. According to the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, May began with 239 active projects, those in conversations with recruiters about expanding or relocating here. If North Carolina were to win all of them, that would be 73,000 new jobs and more than $59 billion in new investment. Our sense is, let's do everything in our power to be ready for when the dam breaks on these projects, Lilly said. Big win. Qatar order to benefit GE's Durham plant. Qatar Airways has announced a deal to buy up to 210 commercial jets from Boeing in what is the aircraft maker's biggest deal ever, with a potential value of $96 billion, the White House announced. The wide-body engines for the new Boeing 787 and 777X aircraft will be assembled at GE Aerospace's Durham site, which houses about 400 employees. With more than 400 engines potentially needed, it amounts to the largest wide-body order in the company's history and, according to GE Aerospace, will mean a major boost to the Durham engine plant, where GE Aerospace has already committed part of a planned $1 billion investment. It's one of just three GE Aerospace commercial engine assembly lines in the United States. Kristen Neubauer, Durham plant leader, said in an email last month that as demand grows, we'll continue to build capacity into our shop to meet that ramp for our customers. A new destination, RDU, keeps adding flights. Raleigh-Durham International Airport keeps adding to its list of destinations. Breeze Airways this month launched service to Rochester, New York, Orlando, and Memphis, while Spirit Airlines has started flights to Dallas-Fort Worth. Multiple new flights are set to launch this summer out of RDU. In May and June alone, 14 new flights are scheduled to take off, including Spirit's new nonstop flights to Newark, New Jersey, New Orleans, Detroit, and Baltimore. They also include new international offerings, such as Air Canada's nonstop service to Vancouver and WestJet's to Calgary, both of which are still on the schedule despite ongoing geopolitical uncertainty. The new flights come at a key time for RDU, which is planning $2.5 billion in capital projects. And bankruptcy looms for a chip maker. Wolfspeed, whose executives have been open about exploring all options to muck its way through $6.7 billion in debt, may be weeks from a Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing. That's according to reports that the semiconductor company based in Durham is nearing prepackaged Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Neil Reynolds, the outgoing CFO, told analysts this month that the company may elect to pursue either in-court or out-of-court options. Optimizing our capital structure has been a stated priority, and we have been engaged in constructive discussions with our financial stakeholders to finalize a plan that will support our long-term success, Reynolds said on an earnings call May 8th. Bankruptcy could hit institutional investors particularly hard, as they amount to more than 82% of its backers. Individual investors account for about 1% of shareholders. When asked about the possibility of filing for bankruptcy, Wolfspeed on May 21st said through a spokesperson that nothing had changed from what executives said on the earnings call. Our earnings announcement also indicated that to achieve our stated goal of strengthening our balance sheet, we are evaluating a number of potential alternatives and may implement a transaction through an in-court solution, he said. In this case and in all other cases we're evaluating, our focus is ensuring that we continue operating in the ordinary course, including serving our customers with leading silicon carbide materials and devices and paying our vendors in the normal course. Spokesperson Tyler Gronbach said Wolfspeed believes it has sufficient near-term liquidity to support the business. Wolfspeed finished its most recent quarter with $1.3 billion in cash and plans to submit for approximately $600 million in Section 48D tax credit refunds later this year in its fiscal 2025 tax returns. The company plans to open a new materials plant in Chatham County this year as well. New CEO Robert Furrell has said the plan is to push to close contracts with leading tech companies as its materials can be used to power AI data centers. Now let's head over to the Retail and Restaurants page by Kate Tracy with the Triangle Business Journal. Chef graduates from pop-ups to first brick and mortar. After more than a year of testing his baked goods on customers at farmers markets and pop-ups, veteran chef Chris McLaurin plans to open Lutra Cafe and Bakery at the American Tobacco Campus in Durham by the end of this year. The venue at 312 Blackwell Street will be in the same building as Ment Beverage Company and Honey Girl Meadery. McLaurin said he looked at many different options for his first cafe location, but kept circling back to the American Tobacco Campus. The 2,600-square-foot restaurant will serve baked goods and pastries in addition to breakfast and lunch, with brunch items on weekends. Lutra will have seating for 60 inside and 20 outside on the patio. At the beginning of 2024, McLaurin started selling baked goods at pop-ups, farmers markets, and coffee shops with the intent to open a brick-and-mortar eventually. It took him more than a year before he signed his lease. The idea was to do pop-ups, to build a following, and to really be able to test out the product we were doing and make sure that what I enjoy eating so much was also something that people were looking for, he said. McLaurin has hired West Workshop and Gateway Building Company for the $750,000 build-out. Landscaper opens Durham Outpost. A fast-growing landscaping company with thousands of employees is expanding in the Triangle. Yardneek, based in Morrisville, has leased a renovated home in Durham at 1617 Camden Avenue and plans to open the office June 1st. Barrett Hines, regional manager at Yard Neek, said the new facility will host 6 to 8 managers. The 1,350 square foot building, as well as the yard, will be home base for hiring, training, field operations, and more for Yard Neek's Durham jobs. Hines liked the building for its proximity to Interstate 85 and 885, as well as the functionality of the building. The company employs approximately 2,000 people, with about 350 in the Triangle. Brian Dumont started Yard Neek in 1997. In addition to North Carolina, Yard Neek is active in South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee. Its other brands include Landmark, Naturescapes, Phoenix, Native Green, and Creative. Yard Neek acquired Landmark Landscapes in 2021, and labor remains one of the top challenges for Yard Neek. The majority of Yard Neek's clients are in the multifamily and HOA verticals, the two areas where the company is seeing the most growth. Hines said the firm is also working to secure more business from commercial and industrial clients as well. One challenge the firm is seeing is the effect that tariffs are having on the cost of items such as irrigation parts and landscaping materials. We are starting to see that trickle down to us, Hines said. And $200 million is Yard Neek's 2024 revenue, according to the company. It's a big number in the Triangle Business Journal today. Details are emerging while plans progress for the Omni Hotel. Plans are progressing toward the construction of the amenity-heavy Omni Hotel in downtown Raleigh. Dallas-based Omni Hotels and Resorts filed site plans on May 7th for the 27-story, 553-room hotel at 10 West South Street across from the Martin Marietta Center for the Performing Arts. Plans name Brady Nix, Director of Construction for Omni Hotels, as developer for the Raleigh Hotel. Raleigh-based Piedmont Land Design is the project's civil engineer, while Atlanta-based Rule Joy Trammell plus Rubio is the architect and interior designer. The site is 1.06 acres bound by West South Street, South Salisbury Street, Lenoir Street, and the landscaping that marks the end of Fayetteville Street. The city-owned site currently functions as a surface parking lot. The Raleigh Marriott City Center borders the site to the north, while the Martin Marietta Center for the Performing Arts is directly to the south. The proposed hotel, expected to open in 2027, totals 685,185 square feet with 287 parking spaces in a below-ground parking deck. In addition to the hotel rooms, the building will come with a 10,856 square foot restaurant, 16,765 square feet of indoor recreation space, 36,372 square feet of convention center space, and 6,570 square feet of office space. Plans show a 4,481 square foot sports bar and a separate 3,082 square foot Capital Cafe on the first floor of the hotel, adjacent to the front desk and lobby area. Plans also show a 9,414 square foot junior ballroom and multiple small meeting rooms. There's also a separate outdoor amenity deck with a pool, pool bar, and three-meal restaurant on the fifth level. The overall cost for the hotel is estimated to be $300 million. In November, the Raleigh City Council approved the allocation of $75 million to go toward infrastructure work related to the hotel project. Nix did not return requests for comment. Omni also has hotels in Asheville and Charlotte. Now let's head over to the executive voice in this edition of the Triangle Business Journal. Today's executive voice is Doug Edgton. North Carolina, once known for textile and furniture manufacturing, is now one of the country's most prominent states in medicine production. Over the past few years, North Carolina has secured major investments from some of the world's largest pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies. The North Carolina Biotechnology Center, led by CEO Doug Edgerton, has been involved in these projects. The organization supports the life sciences through grants and loans to emerging companies while also playing an active role in recruiting. Let's take a closer look at Doug Edgerton. Doug is the CEO of NC Biotech Center, and his hometown is Huntsville, Alabama. He received a bachelor's from the University of Alabama and a master's and MBA from the University of Alabama at Birmingham. His big life sciences announcements in 2024 was that 25 company expansions or new facilities with total investments of more than $10.8 billion that will create more than 4,500 jobs. Now let's begin the Q&A with Mr. Edgerton. How did you begin your career? I had a 20-year career at University of Alabama. I was working in the School of Medicine for the last decade of my career at UAB and then got recruited to the Wake Forest School of Medicine, where I worked for a little over 12 years. I had responsibility of the oversight of the physician practice from a business side and the medical school, including development of the Wake Forest Innovation Quarter. So that put me into acquiring real estate and turning it into lab space. What were your goals coming into this position? We were in more of an academic style of running the organization, and I wanted to move us from that to more of how a business would run. I'll give you an example. From 2020 to 2025, we recognized that there's an early stage money shortage in the state of North Carolina, not enough venture capital. So we thought, what can we do to help the venture capital investments come into the state of North Carolina? So working with our emerging company development team, we started canvassing venture capitalists around the country, getting them interested in North Carolina, and having them come to events here, with the goal of generating $4 billion of investment in the state between 2020 and 2025. At the end of last year, we were a little over $4.3 billion. What are the biggest shifts you've seen? We started doing ag tech about the year I started here, and now I think North Carolina is probably one of the better organized states around using agricultural technology. One of the other things we picked out a while before it became a big deal was cell and gene therapy. We are considered a top contender in that area. We have been, since 2019 or so, doing more recruitment than we could ever imagine. In the first few years I was here, if you heard of a project that was more than $200 million, that was a big project. Now it's like $2 billion is a big project. Why has the state secured these large investments? One of the great things is we have great universities with a lot of technology, with great faculty. We have a great community college system where we can train a workforce. And really, the first question almost any big producer is looking at is, where will I get the people to work in this space? North Carolina has a rich history in manufacturing, and what we had to do is figure out how to transition from the old types of manufacturing to biopharmaceutical manufacturing. How is life sciences investment going this year compared to 2024? It's not been as fast. There is interest, and people are not pulling the trigger quite as fast because they're waiting to see what happens. I don't think we'll hit $10 billion. We might see somewhere in the $5 billion to $7 billion range if everything comes along. Are there areas where North Carolina is behind? Ever since Silicon Valley Bank failed, investment has been slow in the life sciences. When we did a survey of industry leaders for our 40th anniversary, the thing that popped out was early stage money and CEO or C-suite talent. If you're in the Bay Area or in Boston and you decide it's time to make a change, you can still live in the Bay Area or Boston and find another opportunity. Here, it's not as easy. Switching over to the shades of success in the Triangle Business Journal, a switch to power-hungry mode, an increased need for next-gen technology could cause energy demand from data centers to triple by 2030, experts say. This article is written by Connie Gentry, a contributing writer. A recent McKinsey seminar shed perspective on what the surge in artificial intelligence may mean for the energy sector, including the prediction that the supply of energy from data centers will need to triple by 2030. The shift in the growth and demand for data centers is quite unprecedented. Today, the world sits at around 70 gigawatts of data center supply, and all that supply was created in the last 40 years or so, said Pankaj Sachdeva, senior partner. Our McKinsey model predicts by the end of this decade, total demand will be somewhere in the 220 gigawatts range. even if we just get to that 220 gigawatts, we're talking about installing four times the capacity in the next 5 years of what we did in the last 40 years. At Duke Energy, the conversation of supply and demand circles around opportunity rather than challenge. Kendall Bowman, Duke Energy's president for North Carolina, cited the state's population growth and successes in recruiting business as key components in the emerging energy equation. The pace of growth is expected to increase in the years ahead, creating a need to expand electric capacity and modernize our grid infrastructure to be ready for these economic development opportunities, Bowman said. The decisions we make now and the pace at which we execute infrastructure expansion will determine how well we are able to support the exponential growth of large energy users. And AI is expected to be among the largest users of energy, with almost 75% of the growth in data center demand being driven by AI, according to McKinsey. Structurally and architecturally, AI is much more computer intensive, Sakdeva said. A traditional rack in a data center was 10 to 15 kilowatts. An AI rack for GPUs can be 50 to 300 kilowatts. So it is much more power-hungry data centers, and that is changing the architecture of data centers. Duke Energy has executed a smart growth strategy to expand capacity and enable new functionality across the electric grid to serve the increased demand, much of which is being driven by the anticipated growth in data centers. In our 2023-24 Carolinas Resource Plan, we projected about 3 gigawatts of new economic development load across all categories in our dual-state system, particularly driven by advanced manufacturing, life sciences, and data centers. Nearly half of that was from data centers, so about 1.5 gigawatts. That's over and above the Carolinas' strong residential growth factored into our baseload forecast, Bowman said. Duke's initiatives include upgrading components at four of their nuclear stations in North and South Carolina, which will add nearly 300 megawatts of carbon-free capacity. However, the infrastructure needs are both for more energy and for additional facilities. If we don't build the infrastructure, we can't realize the benefits of AI. We need to build a substantial amount of grid infrastructure and data centers to support the rising AI economy, said Jesse Nofsinger, a McKinsey partner. Demand from data centers in 2023 was probably about 1% of global power consumption. As the world's consumption increases, we expect the data center number to be much higher and get to like 6% of global power demand, which is going to create a pretty substantial gap in many markets. To enable the AI economy, Nofsinger suggests investment in the range of $1 trillion is needed to support that 6% global demand number by 2030. But the ROI projection is equally impressive. McKinsey predicts the economic value creation from AI will hit $2.6 trillion to $4.4 trillion annually, topping $4 trillion in 2030. The transmission developers and power generation companies need to think about how to build and develop projects that are clean, have a high ROI, and are located in places that can support this demand, Nofsinger said. When we think about planning periods for grid infrastructure, 5 to 10 years is typically the horizon to think through projects, and in some cases it's a bit longer. So in the near term, there needs to be innovation to squeeze what we can get out of existing infrastructure. To help address the need for additional facilities, Duke Energy is evaluating locations where they already have a robust transmission infrastructure and the capacity to add large-use customers. Existing and planned megasites and locations in transition where manufacturing or large commercial facilities previously existed are all options that can host facilities like data centers and take advantage of existing infrastructure to accelerate power delivery in a manner that reduces costs for our customers, Bowman said. Speed matters for these customers, so these options are good ways we can help meet their needs while also keeping any additional build-out manageable and faster to market. Cost controls are another critical part of the equation, and she expects most of the near data term center most of the near-term data center growth will be in cloud computing rather than AI. When talking about load growth, it is not just data centers, but also large manufacturers and industry bringing significant jobs and investment to North Carolina. Across all categories, most of the growth we're seeing in the Carolinas is from always-on industries that require 24/7 power supply, Bowman said. We're evolving our rate structures and contracts to ensure that large load customers appropriately pay for the cost to serve them, including termination penalties and minimum bills if we make infrastructure upgrades to serve a new customer whose plans subsequently change, she added. These provisions ensure existing customers are protected from the costs incurred to serve such new customers. Chris Hare, CEO of PRTI Tech, has a similarly pragmatic perspective on ROI. As a technology company, we're heavily involved in artificial intelligence, in algorithms and Boolean logic and all that fun stuff. So I have some strong opinions about the noise level around the energy consumption of AI-driven data centers and the cost and labor savings that come from what those AI processes achieve, Hare said. In Hare's estimation, the question is, what do the AI data centers achieve? What improves because of those data centers and because of the energy they use, he said. Does it make life more efficient or safer? Does it improve things like supply chain management? Or does it improve things like clinical trials and the outcomes for humans regarding medicine and disease? I think the answer to all of those is yes. As Bowman considers the growing energy needs across the state, she based Duke Energy's long-range plans on projects that are already in development or that are known expectations. We will certainly have to build new generation, but we are also looking at creative options like improving the efficiency of our existing nuclear and natural gas fleet and using existing mega sites or former manufacturing sites to place data centers to help cut down on transmission build-out, she said. Battery energy storage systems are another area of great promise and an area where we can enable energy from solar and carbon-free nuclear to be stored and released when needed. Some big numbers related to data centers. 70 is the number of data center power supplies today in gigawatts. 220, the projected demand for data center power generation by 2030 in gigawatts. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Christy Walters, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.